listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
Ten toes, we was out on that road, looking for love in the wrong places. We was posed to a stove, yeah. Share jewels, share clothes, that's how deep the shit goes, yeah. Every week you got bros, all of y'all fake clothes, yeah. Y'all switching sides like NBA teams just after halftime. I'm pulling up with my dog to make sure he okay. I don't even have time. He caught me a Porsche with the butterscotch seats. This floor, they have meals. Live better than rappers and they don't even have deals. That's real. Bought Emery a BM as soon as he came home. He hopped on the plane, headed straight to the bay. And that's how we get the game on. It's game on. Ty mama died. I was there. My nephew died. He was there. He in my house more than I be there. More than be there. Tata there, E there, Breezy there, Juan there, High there, Chaka there, Law there, they all here, oh yeah. Dez there, Kwana here, shitting up like Levana here. Crib like Soho House, I might stay in here, grow out my hair. Tight circle, no squares, I'm geometrically opposed to you. Y'all like the triangles, y'all like to troll, do you? Y'all talk around hoes, do you? Y'all don't follow codes, do you? We know everything you say from niggas close to you. You emotional. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tells podcast. Your host, Rod and
Karen. You know what that song let me know?
What?
Did they hang around some niggas?
Yeah. The house.
I was listening to them names. I was like, oh, them some black folks.
Even with all that mansion money and all them trips and private jets and planes.
I'm like, we really still got our niggas.
Right. Jay-Z still kicks it with people named Ty, Juan.
Right, because I was just going, when I first heard it, I said, oh, yeah, all them names is black.
Breezy, High, Chaka, Law, Dez, Kawana.
What white folks y'all know with them names?
They still kick it over there. I mean, they be in the, Emery be in the house more than B be in the house sometimes. That makes sense. That's why when him and his wife beefing, he ain't leaving. No. And if Kanye can't understand that, then oops. Hey,
I don't care if the house burned down. I will sit. I'd be like that little dog in the gift y'all be posting.
We are live on a Saturday, ready to do some feedback in the afternoon. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Search the Black Guy Tips. Leave us 5-star reviews. We appreciate everybody takes the time out to do that. The official weapon of the show is
the taser,
and the unofficial sport
is bullet ball
and bullet ball extreme. Now the feedback show is for all the people who want and are inspired to leave comments, let us know what they think.
Yes.
Throughout the week about the things that we talked about. You know, you can, there's a bunch of ways to do it. You can email us, you can leave comments on our actual website, you can vote in our polls. We have polls on each for each episode, and if you want to leave like a comment there, so yeah, we can make sure that we do that. You know, we appreciate everybody takes time out to do that. The 5-star reviews, we read them as long as they're nice.
Correct.
And you can leave those on iTunes and Stitcher. We didn't get any on Stitcher. We did get a bunch on iTunes today.
Woo-hoo!
So I will be reading those.
Yay!
You can also do stuff like leave voicemails as long as they're 2 minutes or less. 704-557-0186 is the voicemail line. And you can, I think I got everything. What else I was going to say? I don't know what else I was going to say. But yeah, there's a lot of ways to get in contact with us is what I'm trying to say. And we're going to listen to your voice today on this podcast. All right. But first of all, we got to give a shout out to people who donate money.
Yes.
Okay. These are not just premium like subscribers and stuff who we do love, but premium people, they get something for their love. Okay. They send us money. They get hot, new, fresh premium episodes, which guys, y'all won't believe this. It happened yesterday. We are officially over 1,000 episodes of premium content.
Yay! I knew it was close.
We are officially, it was Balls Deep Sports was our 1,000th premium show. And of course, in true Blackout Tips fashion, we didn't have time to stop and smell the roses because 1001 was the Nerd Off, which we've recorded
right after that.
So
we didn't stop.
Yeah, some, I knew I had been working a lot because Professor LCH hit me on Twitter and said, where you been? And I was like, I don't know that something happened. I've been working. She was like, you haven't tweeted it all day or nothing. I was like, man, all I did was work yesterday. Like,
yeah, yesterday was a long day for you.
You know, which is fine, you know, but that's just the game. And, you know, I'm proud of the work we've done. I'm proud to even, some people will never get to 1,000 regular episodes of their show.
Just regular ass episodes, right?
Yeah, this is just premium behind the paywall. We have worked our asses off to make sure that there's content there. You never have to worry about, you know, well, what I'm gonna listen to.
You will always have something to listen to, and that's why it delights my soul when people go premium for the first time. They be like, well, goddamn. Right. Yeah, it's a lot of shit.
So yeah, man, I'm very happy that we were able to make that milestone. Let's talk about the people that gave money, because like I said, you can donate by going to theblackguywhotips.com, leaving us on the right hand side, leaving us a donation. It can be one time, be recurring, it could be small or as big as you would like it to be. We don't say the denomination, we just shout out the people that donate. Correct. And today is no exception.
I dedicate this song to recession, depression, and unemployment. This song's for you.
Today's a new day.
New day, new dinero.
Yes.
Terry W, thank you so much for your recurring donation.
Mm-hmm.
Jason F as well. Tyrone M, we appreciate you, Tyrone.
We do.
We got our brand new recurring donator, Dot Street. Thank you, Dot Street.
Welcome to the club.
We appreciate you. And go join the new members part of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And Conrad will lead you in all the worship services. Alexander M, thank you so much.
Yes.
Waste Bees by Sura, thank you so much.
Yes.
Our man Eric, from Fayetteville State. Attitude check.
Bronco Pride.
You know. Michael I, the playmaker, Michael Irvin, thank you. Damien R, thank you, Damien. Jasmine A, appreciate you.
Yes, we do.
Got a new recurring donator from Renita N. Thank you, Renita.
Yes, welcome.
Renita. So nice to meet you. Senior hardcore. Oh wait, that's Aisha. Sorry. Deborah O, thank you.
Thank you, Deborah.
Stefan H, appreciate you. Janine R, thank you. Jonathan W, we appreciate you. Rachel H, thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
Omat A, appreciate you.
We do.
Mary H, thank you, Mary. Mr. Span from the Span Report Podcast, appreciate you, fam.
Yes, we do.
Corey B, appreciate you, Corey. Thank you so much. Jonathan H, thank you, Jonathan. Jeffrey M, thank you, Jeff. Andy S, thanks, Andy.
Yes.
Nicole F, appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
Early Days of Photography, thank you so much. Carter H, appreciate you. Jay Full, thanks to homie Jay Full up mm-hmm. in the house. KM, thank you so much.
Yes.
Marvin B, yes, Marvin B. Chriselle M, thank you, Chriselle.
Thank you.
Candace H, thank you. Justice J, thank you. Justin J, thank you. Asia D, thank you, Asia.
Thank you.
Nerds and Luxury, those luxurious nerds hooked us up.
Yes, they did.
Solana S, thank you, Solana. We appreciate you. And that appears to be everybody. Woo! That was a lot of people.
Yes, thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Play me out, Kurt.
For me.
Whoa.
Can't you just smile for me?
Whatever you're in right now.
Smile for me.
Smile.
Can you just smile for me?
And the people say,
oh.
All right, let's talk about 5-star reviews. Okay, guys, that's what also the people say. Realest podcast to do it, 5 stars by B. Williker 1, who says, my guy Jakari put me on to you guys because he knows I messes with The Walking Dead hard, and he figured I would enjoy a black podcast that talks about it. I've been subscribed ever since. Keep giving us a voice, my nigs. I got you. How did you get nigs through the screener? Wow, a legend is born,
right? Come on,
iTunes,
pass the census.
I'm surprised iTunes ain't blocked that shit, but hey, you got it through somehow, and we appreciate it.
We do.
And yeah, man, I love Walking Dead. I unabashedly still like that show.
I do too.
No, you mm-hmm. know, I don't think, obviously it's not the best show on TV or anything. Oh, no. It's not perfect, but I still enjoy it. So I don't know. That underscore Mitch said, just everything, 5 stars. Just listen to this podcast. You won't be disappointed. Cousin Rod and Cousin Karen are the best. Thank you.
Thank you. Short and sweet.
Mm-hmm. Love them. I come for Rod, but I stayed for Karen by No Tick.
Oh, thank you, baby.
It's No T-I-Q, so I'm guessing it's No Tick. Heard about your podcast a couple of years ago via the Evening Jones around the Ta-Nehisi Coast, Netroots, Bernie Bro Pandemonium era. I must say, listening to the podcast caused a significant decrease in my previous podcast consumption because y'all cover an assortment of topics with varying perspectives. I've been listening to pods since I discovered what they were back in 06 and actually purchased an iPod for podcasts, not music.
Shout out. I had one of them. I don't know if I got it. I got one of them old school Apple ones that click, go click, 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 click.
Yeah, it had a wheel on the front.
Yes, it was like a color anymore. Wheel. Okay.
Yeah, we don't have it anymore.
We had that shit for years.
I know, blurred. Spent years before the podcast boom doing weekly searches for black hip hop, urban, African American street, or any other word associated for black people. So thank you for cutting out the work for me by consistently having black content creators and curators on your platform. In other news, y'all funny as hell, and even though I began listening for Rod and Bomani's recommendation, it was Karen whom I consistently connected with. I'm from Albany, Georgia, family in Florida and Kentucky, raised in the South, college in Charlotte. So Karen reminds me of all the women in my life that I love. It's also rare that women feel comfortable enough to share their perspectives and life experiences with their friends, family, and much less the world because of, well, you name it. So it's refreshing to hear. Thanks, y'all. Takes a breath. Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it, man. As I always say, Karen's a real star. I'm just up here tossing up these softballs, letting her knock them out the park.
I'm the real talent. Take that.
Shamed. 5 stars, says W. Scott 1386, who says, Karen told me to stop showing up the church cookout only to get a plate and leave. Well, we appreciate you putting something on it.
We do. Thank you. So now you can judge everybody else.
Shame works.
Come on.
I had to rate 5 stars this time, says TCC6116. Thanks, Rod, for reading this. About halfway through, I pushed pause to listen to Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Masterpiece, by the way. All the greats have been writing their own narratives. Aretha Franklin, her biography, Beyonce, September Vogue, Lauryn Hill, this essay, Cardi B, her Instagram. Yeah, I've said it. I'm speaking this greatness. I feel you. Thank you,
yes,
TC.
Yes, thank you.
And yeah, man, I do feel like, look, I'm not saying people can't have issues with Lauryn Hill. It just felt weird, the intensity of it. And I think if you take a step out of it, then it's like, oh yeah, that was kind of weird. But people are painting in my opinion, I would say I'm approaching this the way I approach most things. I don't feel like I'm being too biased one way or the other. Like, it's a joke about the stuff where I'm like, there's the joke of, you know, she late to a concert, read a mm-hmm. book. That's a joke. That's right. An obvious fucking joke.
Right.
But some of the stuff is like, man, we really do excuse a lot of shit for other people. I don't know mm-hmm. why she's being singled out. And it's really hypocritical to see people celebrate, like, musicians that stunt on other people and then be like, but it's something about Lauryn Hill where that's wrong, but it wasn't wrong for these other people. It just feels weird. I don't know. Jeremy got a fucking body double. Like, I don't know. It just seemed like it's people doing way worse shit in the game than being late to a concert. But anyway, I'm glad you listened. I'm glad at least some people heard me. I think a lot of people are just stuck in that, you know, the social pressure of like performing and, you know, and getting your jokes off. I don't mind the jokes. I think the jokes are funny, actually. Like somebody I follow on Facebook said, Lauryn Hill just showed up to Aretha Franklin's funeral. That was funny.
Like, that's fucking hilarious. And like, that shit was like 9 hours.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the jokes, man. Mm-mm, but
that's a good one.
Some of the vitriol to like take away anything she's touched that has been successful and be like, it's not her that made it successful or whatever. It just seems like some shit we really do to black women a lot. And I don't know why she made the list of people that, you know, it's okay to do this to. And I know for a fact all these niggas, if she, something were to happen to her tomorrow, they'd all be fake, like, sad about it and like, oh my god, she was so, you know, this, that, and the other, and misunderstood, and all this shit that motherfuckers do once something bad happened, but they don't have that level of empathy when people are alive. Best podcast, period, 5 stars. Jawbone 8 says, Pastor Rod and First Lady Karen are the perfect team. Funny, caring, and knowledgeable on various issues. This husband-wife team are the quintessential duo. Ooh, I like that. Quintessential duo. You aren't doing podcast listening right if you're not listening to TBGWT. Thank you so much.
Thank you, baby.
For these 5-star reviews. I honestly, I love them.
Me too.
So we appreciate y'all. Everybody that took the time out to leave one, because, you know, it takes a little bit of time, but it really does let us know that you feel us, you like us, you like what we're doing, we're going in the right directions. And honestly, like I said, if you listen to any podcast, not just us, take the time and consider leaving a 5-star review, because it really does make people's day to go, oh, like, even people that don't read theirs on the air, I guarantee they read those reviews, because
they do.
It's so rare to get one, and when you get one and it's like, yo, I like what y'all are doing, it's like I'm not speaking into a void, you know?
Correct.
All right, let's get into comments on the website. We got episode 1743, Followers Aren't Friends. It was a feedback episode. It's rather long, if I remember. Yeah, it was 2.5 hours. No wonder y'all only got 4 shows last week.
Ooh. We had a lot to say.
We was back in our bag over here.
Doing it old school.
Yeah, we got 3 comments. Let me scroll down and when these shits load. Alright, so Falcons Diva says, hey Rod and Karen. Okay, why did I start crying like a baby when Rod started reading that apology? Like, I didn't get to the meat of the apology, but the fact that the brother apologized sent me in. Then when Rod read his response, I almost had to pull over my car. I just love the blackout to his family. I think I'm gonna cry at the live show, and I cry ugly, so I'm gonna be off in the cut somewhere. Yeah, man. Like I said, is in today's like environment of like disposability, and motherfuckers just are so self-absorbed, and our social media has really enabled us to amplify our self-absorption. Like, this is my narrative, this is the way I feel about something, nothing else matters, I'm gonna block out everything. You know, it has kind of made it to where people don't apologize. Nobody's ever wrong. Nobody ever can say, hey, I was just joking, hey, no hard feelings, I didn't mean da da da. Like, that just doesn't happen as much anymore. It's a lot more like, I said what I said, you know, deal with it, and fuck you if you don't like what I, you know, like, there's a lot more of that. I made a joke on my Facebook page where I was like, now when you disagree with somebody, it just means they're gonna stop liking your stuff.
Right.
Like, that's what we've become now. Like, it's, you have a disagreement, well, now I just don't want to see you anymore. I don't want to comment, I don't want to like, I don't want to share. We could be best fucking friends before that, but it literally only takes one disagreement. And I'm not talking about some shit like about someone's humanity, but like anything. You pick the thing. I like the color red, I like the color blue, and there are motherfuckers right now that aren't speaking because of that, you know?
Correct.
So it's just, you know, to have somebody write into the show that, you know, I think the first comment, me and Karen are kind of used to, like, when people do that, they really do mean to troll us,
right?
Or say something hurtful. They normally double down. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was cool for that person to respond back and be like, I didn't mean it that way,
right?
But yeah, that kind of gives me hope, and I hope that our show is more like that than, you know, than just going off on people all the time.
Correct.
Willie F. Brooks says, y'all are my cool auntie and uncle in my head, so when you say you love each other and kiss at the end of each episode, I say it back in my head. Then Rod had to throw me off. LOL, I appreciate the show and y'all's relationship so much, it warms my heart. Yeah, I forgot what I did at the end of this episode, but I'm sure I messed up the kiss.
Yeah.
I think this might have been when I did the Deja Cat thing.
Something happened and you threw me off.
KC Colon 10 says, I was on the plane when Rod found out how to pronounce Jeremiah, and I was crying. Y'all are crazy. Yeah, still Jeremy to me. The poll is, who had a worse week, Nicki Minaj or Lovie? That seems so long ago, doesn't it?
Come on. And internet moves like dog years. That shit moves like every time a second passes, like another 7 years.
Also, in my private life, lovey has become a verb. So just letting y'all know. Maybe I'll put it on the internet at some point, but like when somebody just says some stupid shit on Twitter or social media that they could have just kept to themselves and now they about to get put on the Summer Jam screen, I'll be like, oh my god, girl, did you see this? Mike Coulter done loved up his timeline, you know?
Ooh, like, yes, he did.
Like, Mike Coulter out here getting, he just loving, I don't know what's wrong with him, and it's just so, it's so good. Anyway, 66% of y'all think Nicki Minaj had a worse week. 34% said love you. So, I can see that, you know. I know Nicki gave us that quote, that to freedom shit, but I need to actually go save that audio.
Okay, I missed that one. I don't
know. You haven't heard that?
I don't know where I'd be.
Okay.
Did she do an interview or something?
She has her own radio called The Queen something.
Oh, like, I don't listen.
Yeah, it's on like Apple or something, but that clip has been circulating, for a while. And people like even took like cartoons and dubbed them over with her voice. One of them is Steven Universe. I forget what the name of that stone was that gem that Lapis had to combine with to make it go into the ocean.
Oh, what was her name?
But
I know you're talking about, I cannot remember her name.
Yeah, they had that and it was so good. They had, instead of her saying whatever she said to the gems on Earth, she was saying Nicki Minaj's To Freedom speech.
Jasper.
Yeah, it was, you think Harriet Tubman was walking around with a nice shiny dress on with the crown on her head when she was taking slaves to freedom, she yelled out.
It's Jasper.
Okay. Like I said, it's just if I could find that Steven Universe one, I would.
Oh, that shit probably fucking hilarious. You know I love me some Steven Universe.
Let me see if I can find it. Hate to do this live on the air, guys. I didn't know Karen was gonna ask me about this.
I don't be knowing.
She is voiced by Nicki. No. Oh wait, is Sugarlight really voiced by Nicki Minaj in real life?
Is who?
Sugarlight, Sugilite,
I don't.
Which is Garnet and Amethyst Fuse. Says she is voiced by Nicki Minaj on this thing, and this is a clip from 2014.
Why? I did not know that.
Is that for real? She really a voice actor on Nicki Minaj?
I did not know that.
Voice actress, singer, rapper, songwriter, Nicki Tanya Mirage, commonly referred to as a stage name Nicki Minaj. Yeah, she voiced Sugarlight on Steven Universe. Oh. So it's even, wow, that's crazy.
I did not know that. It don't sound like her.
Wow. Oh man. Anyway, I can't find this meme right now, guys. If I find it on
Steven Universe,
if somebody has it in the chat, I searched that. It's not in there. Cause now, since she's been on here, obviously it's not easy to find. Okay. Anymore. But yeah, if somebody has a link to that meme or that tweet,
that's interesting now.
That shit was so good. Let me see if I can at least play the audio for you, for the whole statement.
Okay.
Close that. Thank you. And I may even be able to play some of the memes on the screen.
Okay.
You think Harriet Tubman was walking around with a fucking nice shiny fucking dress on with a fucking crown on her head when she was taking slaves to freedom?
To freedom.
Like somebody did one of Dexter's Laboratory. Is it showing on the screen?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Let's see if I make this bigger.
You think fucking Harriet Tubman was walking around with a fucking nice shiny fucking dress on with a fucking crown on her head when she was taking slaves?
Yes, Dexter's Laboratory. That's fucking hilarious.
Oh man. So yeah, SpongeBob, they got one. Okay, let me see what this one is. Like, it got Sandy the squirrel.
Yes, Sandy.
You think Harriet Tubman was walking around with a fucking nice shiny fucking dress on with a fucking crown on her head when she was taking slaves to freedom?
Oh, being bomb underneath the water, that's fucking hilarious.
These are pretty good.
These are great.
The one, but I still think the one with Steven Universe is the best, but that's the one I can't find. Damn it. I'm sure if I look on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm gonna see if I can find
it. I retweeted it on my Twitter.
Was it a YouTube clip or?
No, it's straight off of Twitter.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll search for it. But, yeah, I do think Nikki caught it the worst, kinda. Let's see, Steven Universe, Nicki Minaj. Alright, I'll see if I can find it that way. But, yeah, I do think Nikki kinda caught it the worst. We had one comment that said, I think Nikki is on the decline and she just need to chill until she ready to play well with others, especially Cardi. She'll continue to fail. Yeah, she just, like, it's just wild because, I got it.
Okay.
But yeah, it is kind of, wild because she's so, like, self-destructive right now and outspoken, but, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not like, I don't think she's gonna get canceled or nothing. I just think she's just wilding out and everybody's kind of laughing at her, you know, and whenever she's ready to kind of get back.
You think Harriet Tubman was walking around with a fucking nice shiny fucking dress on with a fucking crown on her head when she was taking slaves to freedom?
that is Garnet and Amethyst when they combine.
Yeah, that's my favorite one. And I think it's called Sugar Light or something, or Sugar Light.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah. Oh my God. Anyway, she killed that. Alright, so,
to freedom!
To freedom!
That's fucking hilarious.
Just
gonna start hollering that out for no reason. To freedom!
Right. So.
They're gonna, what the hell is wrong with you?
Boom! The bomb is the best part. Like, she really dropped the flex bomb on it. Does she record in the same studio as Flex? Is that what's happening?
I don't know.
Like, what are the rules with this? Alright, let's get into the next episode, which was 1744. Inconvenience Man. Okay? If I could be a superhero, I would like my powers to make people have to deal with very inconvenient stuff. And we got what appears to be 4 comments on this episode. As soon as they load to freedom. All right, D. Ramsey PH Dunn says, only 14 minutes into the show with random thoughts and it's already 5 stars. # vibrating toothbrushes. EVE says, I actually got into an argument with someone over John McCain because I was asked if I was sad that John McCain died, and I truthfully said no. Then the person asked me why not. I said, I don't think he's as great as people are making him out to be. I appreciate his service to the country, but I think as a senator, he sucked. Now, mind you, I didn't volunteer this information. I was asked. Then I got yelled at for speaking ill of the dead. First of all, this man opposed an MLK holiday, had a whole bill created because he fleeced a bunch of people. He voted on Trump's harmful policies. Yeah, and he voted on Trump's harmful policies. Yeah, he also was against the Civil Rights Act reinstatement under Bush. People want to act like he was a decent person because he told that one woman, Obama isn't an Arab. That was the absolute bare minimum, and even then he didn't have the decency to say there's nothing wrong with Arabs. So because he wasn't as big an asshole as Trump, he gets a pass. Get the fuck out of here with that. I said what I said.
Come on.
I hate when people act like they can't speak the truth when someone dies, because you best believe when Trump goes, I'm gonna tap dance like Diamond and Silk at the Republican convention.
Die.
I feel you, EVE. And I'll take it one step further even on that. The part that's weird to me is this dude was so harmful with his policies, but he successfully modeled himself in the press in the late 90s, early 2000s as a maverick moderate Republican, but he voted conservative as shit. And it shows how easy it is to fool people.
Right. And ask them people out there in Arizona about him that are brown and marginalized.
And I also said when Trump was elected that this effectively moved the country further to the right. And I remember when I said that it was a period of time where there was a lot of political theory, a lot of game theory, and a lot, mostly because of my circle, not because these people are bad or anything, but from very liberal people who are like so woke that they like didn't vote, or they thought letting Trump win would shake the country up. And I said, it's going to have the opposite effect. You think it's going to push us to the left. It is going to push us to the extreme right. And they were like, no, that's not what's going to happen, because, you know, people are going to fight back and resist, and people are going to march. Look at the streets and look at how people already are activated. And I'm like, here's the thing. Trump is so bad. He is making you wistfully look at George Bush and wistfully look at John McCain. That's how bad he is. You are now, that tells me we have moved the country to the right. You cannot, that would not have been a conversation if Hillary Clinton would have been elected.
Right.
It would not be the same conversation of what a great man John McCain. It would be more like, some people would say that because obviously death and they scared, but for a lot of people it'd be like, he wasn't that great. You know, but it's when compared to Trump, well, yeah, he was great. You know, and I think that's what's happening now. And it's funny because a lot of the people that were super hard on Obama and still are to this day, it's like a fucking broken record at this point. Like, them niggas don't like Obama doing anything. He does anything in public and they want to tell you how he's not perfect. And not that I'm walking around thinking that the dude is perfect, but it's like, it's draining how fucking often they hit that fucking like, but you know, drones, but you know this, but you know that. And you're like, Trump is in the White House partially because you kind of joined in with the people that was like, Obama ain't shit, and most of them just turned out to be fucking racist pieces of shit.
Right.
So, you know, while you're so dead set on getting this perfect presidential candidate that never is going to exist and never going to run this country, mm-mm, and no one's ever going to run the country the way you say it should be run, so you might as well sit the political process out if that's what you want to do. Like, it, but you know, once you get to that point, don't expect anybody to look at you like a hero for sitting on your ass and not doing shit.
Right.
So it's funny because like Obama is giving a speech at McCain's funeral today,
mm-hmm,
and there's still people that have issues with like, well, why he's there, why is he this, why is he that? And I'm like, because that's what being presidential is supposed to mean.
And he was asked months ago, what the fuck are we talking
about?
Yeah,
he was asked in April, but the point being, that's what it was supposed to mean. We can't, John McCain can't, like, people went, well, John McCain being petty, he don't want Trump at his funeral. I'm like, not just that, but Trump can't speak at his funeral.
Right.
Trump can't speak. He's not capable of delivering a heartfelt, sincere eulogy that it won't become a mockery, that won't become all about him and his lack of qualifications for the office. And the thing that bothers me the most is I think Trump should be at McCain's funeral, because John McCain supports Trump.
Yes, he does.
Even after that man called him all those names and disrespected his military service, John McCain still would rather have Trump in office than Hillary Clinton. John McCain still would vote with Trump's policies 90-something% of the time. You might as well let him at your fucking funeral and do the speech, and let him diss you in his speech like he does. Talk about your daughter's titties, or your wife being hot, or how you know you weren't that good at war, even though he ducked and dodged the draft himself. Like, you might as well let him disrespect you one more time, piss on your grave, because in life you let him piss on your grave and you let him piss on all of us. So I don't feel the warm feelings people have, because it's fake. It's all just people trying to make something nice out of something that really has no niceness in it. You know, oh, he had a family. Nigga, we all got families. That's the bare fucking minimum of society. That ain't no good excuse. You know, like, he was fucked up towards a lot of the people that people claim to support and love, and ourselves. So I don't feel that level of, whatever it is, the kumbaya feelings people trying to throw into the casket with this dude. I don't feel them.
Mm-mm.
And it's okay that other people will feel them. I think death fucks people up and makes people strange.
Right, because though they like, it's something that I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what happens to us after we die. Everybody thinks they might know. They got a little hint. They believe stuff, but we don't know. And so it fucks people up, and they want to have good feelings about death. So then they basically make it so that anybody that, you know, is important, quote unquote, that dies, we want to feel good about it. We want to find a way that he wasn't a monster. John McCain was a monster in a suit, man. You know, and it is what it is. Like, some politicians are going to come eulogize him, because that's what politicians do. But I don't have to do that. This is not the John McCain eulogy. And more importantly, people are going to do that for him, whether I agree with it or not.
Correct.
It's not like I'm going around arguing with people about it. If you disagree, you just disagree. I stay on my page about it. Stay on my, you know, stay in this podcast about it. But yes, you know, I'm aware of what's happening. And, you know, when Dylann Roof dies, a lot of the people that claim you can't say nothing bad about dead people are not going to be saying that shit when he dies. So
no, they're not.
They're clearly, you know, kind of picking and choosing. I just think we have a different bar for what I consider to be a decent politician or man or person or whatever. And that's fine, because there's going to be people when Obama dies that are going to tap dance on his grave and talk shit about him. And they're not all going to be racist Republicans. It's going to be a lot of people that, you know, you would think you have a lot in common with politically and shit, and you're going to find out you actually don't, because they have taken, you know, a picture of him that you would probably think, well, that's the harshest way to receive what he has done in office and in power, and they're going to shit on him. And you need to get prepared for that. You know, people need to be ready for that day, because that's the way it is. Like, we don't own each other, and nobody owns each other's opinion. But I just thought people either were being fake when he was alive with all the look at this motherfucker caping for Trump, even though Trump dissed him and his family, or they caping now. I don't know when they're lying, but I just know it had to be a lie in there at some point. I don't think you can have both. Well, then we got two comments from, this one is from, who's this from? McCain is a sucker. If Trump were nicer in quotes, people would treat him like McCain and Reagan. And that scares the shit out of me. Yep. Yep. That's the truth. You know, people would treat him like, they treat George, Bush now. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And Lee says McCain didn't like marginalized people and voted that way. Fuck him. Thanks, Ryder Karen Lee. Thank
Agreed.
You.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think maybe these people wrote these comments in late because, the funeral's going on right now. But, you know, I don't really watch TV funerals. Like, I know a lot of people watched Aretha Franklin's one yesterday.
Yeah, it's
just not
watch.
My thing. So, should they just do away with the Miss America contest? Yes, no, or no, but it needs some changes. What do you think, Karen?
And like I said, the people doing it out of tradition now, like, as far as I'm concerned, you can get rid of, like, I don't care. You can get rid of it, you can keep it, do what you want, you know. I prefer you probably get rid of it, but a lot of people do it out of tradition. There's a lot of money behind it, you know. A lot of women actually make a living, you know, off of that. So I completely understand it from that perspective. But as far as the age we live in, that shit is antiquated as fuck.
71% agree with you. Yes, they should get rid of it. No, 5%, and no, but it needs some changes, 24%. Brooklyn Shoebay says, I think Miss America pageant is antiquated, but I do think it could survive with some major overhauls. It's kind of like the young men in college who are there on scholarship to play sports for school benefits the most. In my opinion, their bodies make more money for the backers and boosters than the girls in the pageant. Yeah, it's interesting though, because like, I don't know what they can overhaul to truly make it okay by today's standards.
Right, because it's basically you ogling at a bunch of fine women. That's it in my mind. Like, you just
and, well, I'll take them it out there. I'll take it a step further. Who decides what is fine?
Right.
You know, that's the problem. I think is even if they were able to diversify everything, all the shit, the fact that they're essentially saying a certain type of woman is beautiful and others aren't, and one of these is the most beautiful. I don't know, it's kind of like a weird antiquated notion, but I mean, I guess it ain't going nowhere.
Right, you're basically saying everybody lives to us the white standard, period.
Right,
you know, you're not going against people of different sizes, you know, you barely do people of different colors.
Right, by nature it just becomes about a white centric viewing of beauty, even if it is a even if a person of color wins, it's still kind of like, either it's still kind of like, but they fit these certain standards that we're okay with.
Right, so until you change that, get it the fuck out of here as far as I'm concerned, and that's not going to change. So why are we doing this?
We had episode 1745, Lauren and Serena. Old Green 32 says, there's really nothing left to say. Miss Lauren Hill came through and shut it down, and for people who feel differently, show me the lie. I'm thankful she came out and set the record straight. I hope folks notice that she never called anyone out by name, nor does she get negative. She hit folks with the fact that anyone who had issue with those, I can guarantee, are sitting in the quiet corner on hush. Good on her. Yeah, man, like I said, this shit was draining this week between McCain, this Lauryn Hill shit, and even like over the weekend with some of that Lovey shit. It's just, I don't know, man. I know as black people we're prickly as fuck because we've been fucked with, we all got PTSD, but like,
right,
some of this shit is just like, dog, what is happening? Like, how did we get here so vividly? You know, the woman ain't had nothing to say for 20 years. It's basically like people told her, shut the fuck up regardless of what you have to say. And I didn't find anything in it that I thought was implausible or anything that felt like a lie to me, you know. But that, I don't know, that's just me, you know. I like some of the stuff about the show shit, I get why people rolled their eyes at that, because I thought that was,
I mean, I did too. Like, it's one of those things where, yeah, you need to get that together.
Yeah, that shit was funny to me because I was like, those were jokes I made, but she really is serious.
Right.
You know, and but like, some of the stuff about her music and all that stuff, I'm like, I don't get why. Anyway, whatever. But the other thing, like with the McCain, the way people just flipped into, even black people, some of them was flipping into this, he was a good man, and you're like, wow, is this just a thing where like someone hit a switch and now everybody's brain flipped to like, we have to say this? It's like, you don't have to say this, you know. It's okay to object or to disagree. Like, it's fine to be like, I know white people want us to romanticize this dude, but nah, he was actually kind of fucked up.
Right.
And same thing with I know what it was, the MTV awards, when people was and Firestar had a great segment about it, but when they were talking about Tevin Campbell and then the Madonna shit, and it's just like, yeah man, like anyway, Mel's brother Mel says, two things struck me with RG's commentary, Robert Glasper, I assume. The first was that the men he named who were cool are statistical outliers in terms of both output and ability. Like, real talk, he named men who are far greater than him in every quantifiable measure, and then says she hasn't done enough because she isn't a statistical anomaly like them. The other, yeah, he was comparing her to what most would consider the best of the best. So he's like, Quincy Jones wouldn't do this, and like, well, I mean, I don't think the argument people are making is that Lauryn Hill is Quincy Jones.
Right.
You know, I don't think that's what people are saying, but okay. The other thing is he never mentioned the other women he worked with in terms of contextualizing what it is to work with Miss Hill, aka Queen Aunt of this here Hill. Like, dude has worked with Erykah Badu, Ledisi, Lala Hathaway, but didn't even put them in the rankings when talking about people who have done enough to merit deference. I mean, I know a lot of jazz heads are steeped in misogyny and patriarchy, but bruh, I can't take your argument seriously if you won't even say the name of one of the other few black women you have worked with when talking about slash down to another black woman. And yeah, she was reaching with that lateness equals respect line, but I do totally see her side of the story. Yeah, like, you know, I sucked I had to come out of joke mode, because I really prefer to joke, but every time I joke about this shit, motherfuckers straight up, like, they always take it personal. Like, and so I've stopped kind of talking to people about it, because I'm like, how did this get personal? Like, I thought we were joking. Like, sometimes people joke about the Lauryn Hill shit, I'm in for the jokes. When people want to be serious about it, I can get serious with it too, but when we're just joking around, then yeah, you say something, I say something, it's going back and forth, and then motherfuckers be like, I'm out. I'm like, okay, well, I guess you don't understand the whole Aunt Hill standing for Lauryn thing is that I'm gonna make these, okay, cool. So I can't really tell. So now I'm just done joking, because I don't want to, like, I'm just only gonna be serious about it, because I don't feel like fucking engaging with folks that are gonna turn around and then be like, I was serious the whole time. I really am upset with Lauryn Hill. And I'm like, okay, that seems crazy to me. She's not worth being upset about in the way that you are measuring, you know, people to be upset with. It just seems weird to pick her. Jared says, hey Morrows, I'm outside the US, but left a 5-star review and comment on iTunes. Hopefully y'all get it. Love this episode, Jared. Thanks, man. We'll check. We get an email every week normally on Sundays for 5-star reviews left outside the US, so we'll check on it. Falcons Diva says, on Miss Hill, unlike the Lovey letter, I was glad you read all of Miss Lauryn Hill's response to the nonsense. Rod, I have officially joined the Ant Hill. Hey, welcome. I am one who loved her MTV Unplugged release. I used to get on my friend's nerves playing that. I remember my sister was going through some shit with her husband. I told her to put I Gotta Find Peace of Mind on repeat. Dang, I had to stop and listen to that again. She was so raw and vulnerable on that release. The last time I saw Miss Hill live in concert, she was at an intimate venue here in Atlanta. I don't know why, but I looked at the reviews on Ticketmaster before going. This was before social media was popping like it is today. God must have told me to look. I saw that she was starting 2 hours late, so my friend and I went out for drinks, walked up in the spot right before she came on stage. This spot has seats but also a standing area. We walked right into the middle of the crowd and had an amazing time. Lately she's been coming to spots that will shut it down at a certain time so I don't go. Plus I am very particular about stuff starting on time. If I'm sitting there and someone is late, my disposition is all messed up and I can't enjoy the show. The last time I saw India Ari in concert, she pulled a Miss Hill. When she did come out, the show was amazing, but it took the first three songs to get my chakras back in line. So that was the last time India Ari show, but I still love both India and Miss Hill. Yeah, like I said, man, I'm not even trying to knock people that's mad about her showing up late to shows. Mm-hmm. I really do get
that.
And it was jokes. I can't reiterate that enough, because now I'm paranoid, because at this point some people have seemed to have taken me so seriously about the joke shit that we've lost the ability to have a discussion about what I really do feel are some double standards that apply to her that I haven't seen applied to everybody, you know?
Right.
On Serena, I think what grinds my gears the most is that those mofos intimidated that she does not respect the game. I was right with Queen Karen. She learned French for you bitches.
The only American who would actually be on French TV speaking French at the fucking French Open.
When she is on, it's must-see TV for me. After her Wednesday night match, the on-court interviewer actually asked about her grandbaby, Quay Quay, or is it Quay Quay? I hollered when that uptight white lady with her British, I think, accent said Quay Quay. I get so tickled when they post videos of Olympia and Quay Quay. Serena got her baby and a black baby doll and named her Quay Quay. I love it.
Yeah, she be posting that baby on Instagram. It's hilarious.
But Mill 73 says, Karen and Rod, full disclosure, over the past few years, I have also engaged in the clowning of Lauryn Hill's lateness to concerts. It seemed to be all in good fun, playfully berating people who in 2010 actually paid money to see her perform, then complained about her lateness. We were all supposed to know that a Miss Hill concert would start 3 hours late. The stuff from Robert Glasper was different. It seemed very mean-spirited. It seems like he wanted to put in doubt the greatness of the Miss Education. Its greatness is without question. And when the score came out, I was still using cassettes, so I wore that motherfucker out because I played it constantly. Who could forget her track on the Love Jones soundtrack? Then came Miss Education. All by the time she was 23, the only thing I excelled in at 23 was chain smoking menthol cigarettes. I know, stereotypes are a motherfucker. There's a meme going around that on one side names a track by Beyonce and lists all the credited songwriters, and on the other side it names a track by Queen and lists one songwriter, Freddie Mercury. The implication is that Mercury is more talented than Beyonce because presumably he didn't need a bunch of songwriters to help him make a hit. Inherent in this meme is the basic racist and misogynistic premise that a white man is far superior artist to a black woman. The simplistic narrative doesn't acknowledge the fact that all songwriting is collaborative, or that a singer like Beyonce, even when working with other songwriters, is the final arbiter of the finished product. This reminds me of when Beck beat Beyonce for the Grammy, and a bunch of motherfuckers that have never listened to Beck's album couldn't wait to tell me that Beyonce was not talented because it took more people to make a Beyonce song than Beck can play five instruments or shit and shit like that. And I'm like, but we just talking about albums, their cultural impact on the world, and you're telling me an album that essentially comparatively nobody really listened to is a Grammy winning album? I don't believe you. You know, I really think that, you know, it's arbitrary. What can we say about Beyonce to not give her the obvious credit? Because that was for the self-titled album. That was a game changer. And, you know, so I don't think what has happened to Lauryn is essentially only a Lauryn thing, which is why I feel compelled to be like, well, hold up now. People are taking this a little too far, you know, because I don't think it's just about Lauryn. I think a lot of talented black women and in the era of Me Too and in an industry that is dominated by men, that, like, I guess to me, it's like people say shit like, what happened to Tweet? And I'm like, man, what happened to Reese? Man.
Right, and I fucking love that CD.
Like, there's all these talented women, and people say shit like women get canceled so easily and stuff like that, and I'm like, I don't even think it's about canceling. Literally, it's an industry run for and by men, and if you're not a certain type of woman, they not even fucking with you. And even if you are that type of woman that they claim to want, like say a Nicki Minaj, they will still cast you to the side because they'll never respect you for being that type of woman.
Mm-mm.
Like, they just, like, it's a fucked up, rigged industry, and I don't think it's a meritocracy. So to see someone as vocal as Lauryn has been about, like, the rigorousness and the traitorousness of the industry, it's weird to me to want to be like, fuck you, bitch, not you. You don't get to say. It's like, well, I mean, she might have a point, being that she is and / was the Lauryn Hill, and this is what happened to her career, and she's telling you, like, these are the things I had to do to avoid these, like, to avoid this industry and the lecherousness of it. And instead it's just like, fuck you, I got jokes, you know. The kind of disrespect is part and parcel of the revisionism that Glasper is attempting with that interview. Admittedly, Lauryn made the mistake of engaging in a collaborative process and not laying out the terms explicitly, leaving the door open for the kinds of challenges she experienced. Maybe this is why when you look at Beyonce track listing, everybody and their mother has a songwriting credit. She is leaving nothing to chance. Lauryn made the mistake and she paid the price. This should put the whole episode to bed, you would think. When we talk about genius, we are loath to credit women in general, and black women in particular, as geniuses. That little nigga named Nas had one hot album, well, maybe two, and has been spitting bullshit for damn near 20 years. Ooh, this is a lot of hot eat right. I didn't. Yeah, this is Mills' opinion.
Yeah.
Nas fans do not write up to the show. I did not say these things.
I didn't either.
And people still regard him as one of the dopest MCs alive. Nobody questions his songwriting ability or the providence of his great early works, even though he has yet to replicate them. Why can't Miss Hill be regarded the same way? She should be allowed to rest on her laurels. On another note, for all the French cats throwing shots at Serena, they only get half a bar. Fuck them niggas, Emil. Yeah, here's the other thing. Drake don't even write his own shit.
Most people don't.
Drake don't write his own shit. He's like the top of the game. Like, it just is what it is, man. I don't think people really care about that. It's just something about Lauren that digs at people, and I don't know what it is exactly. And I haven't really seen anybody express it, because I don't think it's because she was late to a few concerts that she gets the same level of vitriol that motherfuckers have for like a Chris Brown or some shit. It just don't make sense to me. I'm sorry. Gator Boy Speak says, nigga, I almost died with that story about the camera. You said he went through the camera box, in the trash like they would never look here. All I could think was that white man been sitting at his computer jacking off since he put that camera up. He didn't want to miss a single titty. That garbage has been in his house for 3 months.
Right.
I literally couldn't see I was crying laughing so hard. And that's why I fucks with y'all. Stay safe, fam. Thanks, Gator Boy Speak.
Thank you.
KC Colin says, the commercial by Serena made me tear up. It's always crazy until you do it. Sometimes no one sees the vision that you have for your life. No one understands why you train so as hard as you do, why you sacrifice as much as you do, why you try as hard as you do for a pipe dream. But when the dream becomes reality, they still want to knock you down. And for Serena to become one of the best athletes of our time, if not ever, and for people to continue to disrespect her as an athlete, woman, parent, African-American, it can be so depressing. But when you are greatness, there's no time for missteps. There's no time to feel sorry for yourself or to lash out at the naysayers. You just have to keep pushing, keep breaking boundaries, keep holding up your head, and keep trampling over your enemies. I cannot tell you what her last game was like, what her tennis racket looked like, but I can tell you that her character shines through and on and off the court. I'm thankful for Serena because she gives me, an African-American woman, so much hope for what my future holds. I was thinking about that today. I remember when Richard Williams was just seen as the crazy black dude that had no business putting his daughters out there. And I remember believing that when I was in high school and part of my college. I was like, oh yeah, this dude gonna ruin his daughter's lives. He's out here on some Joe Jackson shit, you know, like. And I got out of college and I realized, like, wait, I really only heard that from white media people already in tennis that wanted me to believe that this black outsider and his family didn't belong and he needed to hand his daughters over to white people to instruct them how to play tennis because he could never teach them the game the right way, as far as they were concerned.
Right.
And when you see interviews with him now and stuff, you see how much of what people would label as craziness, devotion, delusional, whatever. You see how much of that was actually about protecting his daughters.
Right, because he knew they was going to be on some bullshit.
And
he didn't want them to tear them up and tear them down where they could not be the women that they are today. Because I remember they showed like an interview like years ago where I don't remember Venus or Serena. One of them was asking them like a question, and the way the question was phrased, it was basically trying to just basically attack her and her character. And her daddy stepped in like, what you not gonna do with this bullshit doing this goddamn interview?
Right. And see, they would label him hostile and paint him as being problematic for doing shit like that, because to white people that is problematic, you know. And this is not, you know, some LeVar Ball shit. Like, I know people will try to maybe paint it as such, but it's not like LeVar Ball. People want to group it all together, but LeVar Ball's sons aren't outsiders coming into a white sport and being judged and called ugly and all this shit. He just really believes in his sons and promotes them and stuff. I'm not even, you know, and believes in his shoe brand, and maybe he will be right in 20 years, but it's not the same battle as Richard Williams trying to get two black daughters from Compton into a very white racist world. And I think in a way, only a father, only another black person that was that dedicated to those girls would be able to prepare them to become Serena and Venus that we know now. People that, for all accounts and purposes, dominate the shit out of the competition while at least exhibiting a level of composure that is otherworldly. I mean, like I said, they've called her racial slurs her entire career. The people talking about her body in negative ways, and people writing about, you know, she shouldn't be in swimsuit issues, and she also shouldn't take Instagram photos with her belly when she's pregnant, and she also should. Now, keep in mind, if Sharapova wanted to do that, that's fine. You know, Sharapova could be a whole ass model, and that's fine. That's just the way the game is. But if Serena does it, it's wrong. You know, the people writing about her body as if she has some sort of advantage that white women don't have, but they can't tell you exactly what. You know, saying these other women are gonna have to start lifting weights as if she has no skills and she's just overpowering every person she plays. Like, nah, tennis is a game of skill too. Here's that interview when she was 14 years old.
I know I can do this.
I know you. Very confident.
I'm very confident.
You say it so easily.
This is Venus.
Why?
Because I believe it.
So he said, you know you could beat her. And then she's like, I know I could beat her. He said, you're very confident. Why? And then that's when Richard turned in and it was like, hey, nah, we not about to do this.
Come on. We not about to do this bullshit that you doing right here, white man. You're not about to tell my daughter up on national television.
All right. I don't know why the audio's so low on this. I really should have found a better video.
I do have a better
one. She said it with so much confidence the first time. But if you keep one on and on, I said, we can't keep interrupting. I mean,
so he says basically like, she answered you the first time and she was confident. You don't keep going after that. Like, move on to the next question. And so then the dude becomes like, hey, you can't be interrupting the interview, which leads me to believe this is only a 50-second clip. This means Richard has been interrupting this interview to be like, hey, nope, y'all talk to my daughter this way. Hey, don't ask this question. Because the dude is annoyed with Richard's interruptions, clearly feeling some type of way about the fact that, like, awesome, y'all should just be happy I'm fucking interviewing y'all black ass. Like, I know y'all ain't trying to dictate how I talk to your daughter. Like, I'm here. That was the whole point.
Yeah, and that goes, in my opinion, a lot of this goes to why they fucking hate them, because they're so confident and they're so unapologetic.
Also, Richard was protective.
Right.
Because 14, like, no offense to any 14-year-old child, but 14 is not really confident yet.
Right.
Someone is molding you and building you to be the person that stays, like, that retains that. Like it is stripped out of black people so often.
Yes, it is.
And especially black girls. But it's stripped out of us so often as black people, where you don't, all of a sudden it's like, you know, at some point you don't want to be the angry black woman. You don't want to speak up. You don't want to be too loud. You don't want to laugh. You don't want, it's all these things that black women that are grown ass adults have these hangups about, because at 14, nobody was saying, hey, don't talk to my daughter like that. She said she could beat her. What the fuck is the problem? Why are we asking the question 3, 4, 5 times? I'm aware my daughter is black in a way that you aren't. And I know that these questions are not going to stop with you, but I need you to stop, because I'm here today. And it's not, you know, and until flower has blossomed all the way, I don't want you trying to rain on her. You know,
right? And Eli Manning's whole ass daddy was like, would he not gonna go to whatever that team was? And right. He ended up going to New York, but right. Nobody ever said his daddy was overbearing. Not trying to be funny. Right. Nobody ever said his daddy didn't have no business, quote unquote, dictating and telling his child what to do.
3 or 4 years ago, Tom Brady, who was a grown ass man, his father called into a radio station to defend his son. Tom Brady is fucking 40s. Like what? Like. But like I said, it's just different, you know. Anyway,
if you want, you got to understand that you're dealing with an image of a 14-year-old child, and this child gonna be out there playing with your old ass, and he gonna be in the grave. When she says something, we done told you what's happening. You deal with a little black kid, and let her be a kid. She'll answer it with a lot of confidence. Leave that alone.
There you go.
You said so easily.
Right, and they just kind of loop back to the beginning. But yeah.
Yeah, his daddy, her daddy got mad, be like, nah, what you not gonna do is this bullshit right here. She's a child. If she was a little white child, you'd have let her roll off of being confident.
Right, and also
confident.
And also, it is different for her.
Right.
Because white kids get to be confident in a way where they are allowed to, like, it's, we're impressed. It's the reason that white kids have lemonade stands, but the cops don't get called on them.
Never.
You know, it's the reason where the outspoken black kid in school is a troublemaker and sent to the principal, and the outspoken white kid is like, oh, he's a class clown. You know, it's the difference. And without that parental protective father figure, what happens to those girls? Without him being the fanatical, delusional person that they claimed he was, because now he's a prophet, but before that he was you know, people were comparing him to like abusive fathers like Joe Jackson and shit, you know. So I don't know, man. If it wasn't for him being crazy, quote unquote, I don't know that we get Serena and Venus playing for the 30th time last night on Friday at the U.S. Open.
Right.
I don't know that we get that. And if he would have just said, well, I don't know what I'm doing, let me put these girls in the hands of some trainers when they're 13, 14 years old and let them manage their careers, I don't know that white people would prepare these sisters for this.
Mm-mm.
Because it seemed like he prepared them every step of the way to not just be confident, but to be composed and to be unbothered and unfazed.
They'd have fucking crumbled.
Right. I just don't know. White people would have been telling them that even though they calling you nigger, they love you, you know? Like, I just don't think it would have been the same. Trey Swindu 744 says, thanks for the episode, Rod and Karen. Absolutely love what y'all said about Serena, her sister, and her father. That's love, all of it. Also love what you said about Lauren's response to Glasper. She pretty much explained everything concisely and clearly. I just wish she had been able to part from that Marley boy sooner than she did, but because he was still the father of her children, I know that's something that's not always the easiest thing to do. I think that's one of the many problems she has had to deal with that caused a heavy burden on her life. As a fan, I hate to see that even Lauren has to deal with it. Ain't shit nigga too, lol. I wish peace and happiness to her always, though. Always thanks, Rod and Karen. Yeah,
thank you.
And last one was, did you hear did hearing directly from Lauryn Hill change your mind at all? No, I was already on her side. Yes, or no, I will always despise her, even worse than the Catholic Church. Mm-mm-mm. You people, 12% of y'all will always despise her, even worse than the Catholic Church. And y'all sicken me.
Wow. Right? Wow. Really, y'all? Wow.
They really said that. Worse than those pedophile rapists. Wow. 24% said yes, and no, I was already on the side. 63%. Brooklyn Shoebay says, I'm just going to be brief. I was always on Lauren's side. In my humble opinion, she made such a brilliant album that after a decade, I didn't want her to make anything else. When she won all those Grammys as a rap / hip hop artist, I was and will always be proud as a woman, hip hop head, and a contemporary. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the Jordan argument. People really need her to fit into some like specific lanes for them to evaluate her talent. And I'm just like, she was talented. She gave us what she could do. And I liked it, and I thought she was really fucking good. I like, to this day, I still feel like she's one of the best MCs I've ever heard. Like, I'm sorry I don't have the same like outline as you do, where you need 12 albums or a certain amount of like whatever. Like, I don't know, if you told me, like, sitting in a room, like, pick some people that you want to hear do freestyle, she's gonna be in my top, like, I don't know, 10 or so people that I would like to hear freestyle from. That's my preference. That's my flavor, you know? Miss CT says, I'm not in the high, but I understood when you came to her defense in one of the last episodes. I think the jazz artist was attacking her because he wanted to sell a few albums, and getting to her was the best way to do so. Exposure creates expansion, whether positive or negative exposure. But it's the reason why she stepped away from the spotlight to begin with, to avoid this type of negative publicity. While I don't agree with the whole late shows thing, as we've already discussed ad nauseum, yeah, attacking her character when she paid you and you ended up doing whatever the hell you wanted to do anyway, it's just harmful and hateful for no reason. Yeah, he picked the right target, because nobody's gonna come back and say, Rob, wasn't that kind of fucked up on your part? You know, like, as like, you know, you did do the gig, you did take the money, Meanwhile, you thought she was somehow a charlatan and a music thief and all this stuff. Why did you even take that gig? You know, you're the one that says it was fucked up. She's fucked up. It's just kind of weird, you know. And it's not like he has no skeletons in his closet either, you know. Like, he got accused of being sexist because of the way he talks about jazz. And women in the jazz game have been fighting very hard for respect. It's a very, you know, jazz is also a very misogynistic industry, like all the music industry. Yeah, there was this article yesterday on International Women's Day. Most of my friends were in full empowerment mode. This is written by Michelle Mercer. When they were sporting red clothes, naming their top five women artists and posting photos of mothers and daughters. But over in the jazz world, International Women's Day was a little more awkward. We were busy attending some much less celebratory women's business, a series of online events that we'll call the Saga of Musical Clitoris. Yes, according to some, there's a musical clitoris, though please don't worry if you've never found yours. It all began with a Robert Glasper interview published last weekend on Do the Math, the blog of the Bad Plus pianist Ethan Iverson. The jazz world treasures Do the Math for its insightful content, particularly its revealing interviews, in which Iverson's status as a fellow musician is a clear advantage. Midway through his interview, the charismatic Glasper decided to build some rapport with Iverson in a manner familiar to straight men all over the world by talking about how much the ladies love them. After asserting his own unusually authentic conversance in R&B, hip-hop, and jazz, Glasper brought on the flattery. I've had people tell me about your music, like women you would think never listen to jazz. Young, fine Euro chicks ask me, Euro chicks? But that's y'all hero? I heard this band, The Bad Plus. Do you know them? And Iverson said, I guess that's one of the reasons to play, really. So, you know, play to get some women, you know. Glasper went on, I've seen what that does to the audience, playing that groove. I love making the audience feel that way, getting back to women. Women love that. They don't love a whole lot of soloing. When you hit that one groove and stay there, it's like a musical clitoris. You're there, you stay on that groove, and the women's eyes close and they start to sway, going into a trance. Now they said Glasser's comments come as a shock to exactly zero people who spent any time in the jazz world. I've heard variations of the women can't really follow jazz theme ever since I first started hitting jazz clubs and following extremely long solos. To be a female jazz fan and a critic is to live with a frustrating irreconcilability. I have an intellectual passion for creative, complex music, and sometimes the musicians who make that music doubt my ability to appreciate its creativity and complexity. So, essentially, Robert was like, women don't follow jazz on the same cerebral level as us men. But if I say he might have some issues with women,
yeah,
I'm tripping.
The whole thing sounds very misogynistic.
Yeah, like, that's essentially what he said, is, you know, the women can't really follow it, and then not to mention turning the interview into, we do this to get some hoes, but, you know, but that's the dude that I was supposed to be like, well, obviously his opinion on Lauryn Hill is more important than anything else, and nothing she can say back can explain any of this shit. She just needs to, quote-unquote, take the L. That's weird to me. 1746, fiscal conservative. We talked about preparations for the live show, LGBTQ news, Kanye West apologizing. Let's see what we got here. R.N. Gullidge says, Rod, could you make this playlist public, please? All the songs you play were indeed my shit. Excellent show as usual. Thanks for all you do and you and Queen Karen do. If I remember, I will put it in the show notes for this episode, okay? Because I didn't want to just share it on Twitter and Facebook, because at this point, I feel like people take shit out of context, and while it might be a funny little inside joke on a podcast or something for me and, you know, my friends that are my friends on Spotify and shit, I can honestly see people being like, all black women don't like this, or what you mean black women and the gays or whatever. I don't want no problems. Right. It was a little joke for the show, and I think people that listen to the show obviously get it, because it's like, yeah, oh, it's my shit. That's a good list of songs. To people outside the show that don't give a fuck about context, they would just somehow end up making it a big deal. So I will share it in the show notes, guys. All right. Our boy Jeremy says, what up, Rod and Karen? Just wanted to swing through and show y'all some love, because it's been a while. Good luck on the coming live show, and I'm very proud of y'all. Signed, Jeremy Bacon Grease Baron of CSPN. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
That Tish says, Kanye really sat there and apologized for our feelings about what he said. Unless there was more that he said in another point in the interview, he never took his words back. Never said that he didn't actually believe what he said. He just apologized for that MAGA shit and what he said about slavery, hit people hard, and then nobody asked directly if he still believes it now. Whenever somebody apologizes, I listen for an apology for what they did, even if a shitty excuse surrounds it. Anything else is just fluff to try and get us to back off of them. I would have felt more for him if he would have just said, y'all, I was tripping, my bad. He basically put the blame on us for being offended so he can still kiss my ass. Sure. I mean, like I said, I never got as offended as the rest, as a lot of people did about this shit. And I always felt like whatever was going on with him was something bigger than just some regular ass cooning, because I just don't know what's up with his mental state. And I, you know, and I don't feel comfortable. This shit just did not sound like it made sense to me, and I don't know where that came from. All that being said, hey, if you don't want to forgive, to me, it wasn't about me forgiving him. I never was really mad. So if you are offended and, you know, waiting on him to say something that would make you forgive him or whatever, I don't think that's gonna happen. He just doesn't seem to be that kind of dude. I more felt bad about two things in the interview. One, I felt bad because he sounded like he damn near was crying, because he finally was sitting in a room with other black people that weren't there to exploit him in the way that Charlamagne was, in the way that TMZ was. He was finally sitting in a room with a black woman in Chicago, from Chicago, who was like, we root for you because you're a black kid from Chicago, and you let us all down with this bullshit, and you hurt me. And then he could not keep up the fucking act anymore of, well, it's a choice or whatever. He had to be serious for a second, and it sounds to me like he don't have those kind of people in his life no more. Like, maybe I know he kept talking about he could talk to Don C or whatever in Chicago, like that, if he had somebody like that that would help him out. I don't know. I just know it just seemed like a moment of where I felt bad for her for still wanting to believe in him and still wanting him to do right by her in Chicago and black people, and feeling like he should be a spokesman. And I also felt bad for him just for the fact that it made me think, I don't know, it just made me feel like something is going on with him that's bigger than just, you know, some regular, the normal coon shit, you know. Like, it didn't feel like Diamond and Silk to me. It seemed like something's off with that dude. Falcons Diva says, Rod, I'm also an empath and watched the video of Kanye's apology, had me feeling some kind of way. There's a stark contrast from when he was making the slavery comment or hanging with Trumpsters. I can't explain it, but there's a look in his face and tone in his voice that makes me more concerned for him than mad at him. That's what I'm saying. Recently in my spin class, the instructor played videos for Otis and Niggas in Paris. Kanye looks so happy in these videos, and I just want him back in F space. And I'm not even a Kanye fan. I just watched him vacillating between what seems like sanity and insanity over the years. I would never try to opine on his mental state, but it's apparent when he needs help. I mean, he's the one talking about being bipolar and it's a superpower and he off his meds. I mean, I don't feel like I'm making anything up. I just think people care when they care and they don't care when they don't care. And he said some things that hurt black people's feelings, and black people, rather than we feel like we're at a point in society where admitting that our feelings were hurt makes us weak. And so he hurt our feelings, quote unquote, you know, collectively as a race. And now he has to go. And if I were to say, well, it might be, you know, some stuff with his mental state, it just don't matter. It doesn't matter. We are mad, and that's it. And I'm saying it that matter of factly, not to be dismissive, but because that's the bottom line. It doesn't,
right.
You know, I'm not trying to be pejorative or belittle anyone's emotions. It's just, I've read the story already. I know how people feel, and it doesn't matter what you bring up. They just basically go, I'm mad at him and fuck him. And that's their right to, you know, I hope he gets the help he needs, you know, but yeah, I understand how people are just basically like, I don't got time to waste in my life about this shit no more. Anonymous teacher says, hey, Rod and Karen, I've been wanting to write you two for a while, but have been crazy busy with the start of school and life. I really appreciate your show and I love you all so much. Warning, long letter coming. I'm a teacher and my husband and I, have been listening to your show for over a year now. We finally became premium last month and I'm happy we did. Keep up the great work. Before school starts, we always have professional developments about all kinds of stuff to get ready for the school year. We had a couple PDs that seriously got to me. We had a meetings about mental health with schools and active shooter information for all the teachers. In these meetings, they presented us with data. What do we do if we have an active shooter on campus? Videos that focus on one kid and not the real one that does the shooting, and an actual 911 tape from Columbine. In general, I felt extremely triggered, bothered, and highly emotional. I felt that they are trying to get us to pay even more attention to our students, which we already do this day in and day out, and find more warning signs to prevent school shootings. It feels like if something was to happen at school, they would be talking to us, the teachers that literally see them for less than an hour a day, and asking us, what did we do? Teachers are already highly sensitive to school shootings, so we know that they are serious. What was interesting to me was that some of my coworkers didn't know that school shootings have been happening since the beginning of the 1900s. We watch our students constantly because many of us are scared that it will happen at our school next. I understood why they gave us the data and mental health information on school shooters, but what I didn't feel was needed was a 911 tape played for us.
Right.
The playing of the actual 911 tape from Columbine. We were hearing screams, gunshots, and everything. I wanted to leave, but no one was walking at the time. I just looked around and saw over half the teachers in the room sobbing, and I was one of them too. I cried almost every school shooting. I did learn something new, that a little under half, about 45% of all mass shootings are done at schools. That's a huge percentage, especially in America where we have so many. We were even told that there isn't a type for students that could do a mass shooting, so we need to pretty much highly watch out our students even more than what we were before. I love my job and I'm pretty great at it, but it's becoming really hard, and I know I can't stay in this field on top of everything else that we do. It's sad that my job has come to this, and that no one at all will talk about the real issue are that guns are horrible and we don't need them. I wish we could ban them like you have talked about many times on the show, but I know that is a fantasy, and America loves their guns more than their people, more than their children. They love them more than their children. I just wanted to let you know there are lots of people that agree with you and keep talking. Love you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
And yeah, they love their guns more than those fucking than their own children. That Newtown one was the one. That was the one where, or was it Sandy Hook? With those two, I guess, if those are the same one, then those, that one, but
it's two separate incidents.
That's two separate. Okay, those were the ones. I said, you know what? We're irredeemable as a people. We're irredeemable. People would rather believe those parents made up their children and are crisis actors than say this was, you know, we need to get rid of guns. Do you think that politician was trying to be racist? The one that said we don't need to monkey this up in Florida. 95% said yes. 5% said no. I can't believe this wasn't 100%.
That's why we always shocked when we get 100%, y'all.
Evie says, I've heard the term monkey around and muck it up, but never monkey it up. That jackass knew exactly what he was saying, and Fox News was the perfect place for him to say it. Fuck that guy, fuck Florida if he wins.
Come on.
All right, let's look at y'all's voicemails. We got a couple. Play these.
What's up, Rod and Karen? This is Trouble Scooter. I'm calling in regard to episode 1740, and you're talking about the university charter school in, I think it's Livingston, Alabama. I went to public school in the black belt. Like, it's only like 2 hours from where I currently live and where I went to high school. Part of what you're saying is accurate. Yes, it was schools were integrated, but what you have to also remember is that because it is a 70% black population, those 20 to 30% of white people, all they did was open smaller private schools. And if you look throughout not only this state, but other southern states, if you pay attention to the schools that, quote unquote, are the best, when you go to sites like greatschools.net, or when you read those news articles that they put out all the time about the best schools, oftentimes when you look into their history, you find out they started from the fact that this small group of white people figured they wanted to make sure their kids get the best opportunity, period. And so the way they did it was make private schools or Christian academies and just continue on. And oftentimes, what also happened is that even those black people who do have who are a little bit middle class, they'll send some of their kids over there. So you might have teachers who work in the public school system in Sumter County that were black that sent their kids to the private school. So negating any kind of like improvement for the other kids or the community in general, because they're just sending their more.
Oh, you got cut off. All right, next one.
Hey, Ron and Karen, this told school again. I got disconnected. But what I was saying was that you might have educators who were teaching in the public schools who decided to send their kids to the local private school or the local Christian school. And I don't want to make it sound like it's all racial based, because if you take a look at example, or something like basketball-wise, you know, Shawnee kids might go to this really small school, but you know it's a private school. And when they probably could just go to like a public school as well and have some of the same opportunities to, you know, socialize with kids their age and from that are also black. But because, you know, their parents have more money and they have more resources, they tend to send their kids to schools that have more advantages anyway. And it's because, you know, they want to, quote unquote, ensure that their child has the best education and get more attention. So yeah, that's what I wanted to call and say, that yes, it was back in the late 60s that integration was supposed to happen. But unless you look at actual school policy from county to county, state to state, you can never really say that there was true integration. Even if somewhere like in North Carolina, it might be the same way. All right, bye.
All right, thanks, Trojan Scooter. And yeah, I feel you. That's the lesson of the day, I guess. I definitely see what you're saying about people with means. I guess what I'm saying is, with charter schools, a lot of white people that don't have the means to pay for private school will still use them to try to find a way to get away from black kids.
Right.
To get their kids away from black kids. And if you have the means and you want to go pay somebody for an education that you feel is superior to public school, I understand that. Black, white, whatever. It's funny that people that don't have the means want a stipend to keep their white kids away from too many black kids. That's the racism.
And that's the problem that I have.
All right, next voicemail. We got one more.
Hi, Rod and Karen. This is Kelly Jo from Indianapolis, Indiana. My goal is to get to your show on September 20th. Can you give me a little bit of what it took for y'all to jump out there and make such a remarkable show? Holler at me. Read my comment on your show. I give y'all 5 stars every chance I can, but my computer's so old. So holler at me. Love y'all. Bye-bye.
So I guess to jump out there and start our podcast, or you mean to jump out there and start the live show? I think she meant the podcast. What do you think, Karen?
That's what I'm assuming.
Okay, so to start the podcast, the main thing was we listened to a lot of podcasts. I know I did. My favorite podcast at the time and still what I think is the best podcast in the game is Keith and the Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a show where someone wrote in complaining about some bullshit and saying how their show wasn't that good and anyone could do it, and they said, well, you know what, if anyone can do it, why don't you do it, right? It's so easy, start your own show. And they said it, you know, pejoratively, to be like, we're good at this, like, why, what the fuck are you talking about, you're listening to us. But also it was motivational to me because I said, why can't I start my own show? And you know, I think Karen and I have good conversations, and I was like, we should do a show. And Karen is dependable, studious, and funny and charismatic and all that stuff, and I was like, I can't think of a better show partner to do this with that'll be as committed to this as I am. And you know, we started the podcast, and it was to us, it didn't feel like jumping out there necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time, podcasting was such an insular medium. It was, you know, maybe a handful of people on Twitter listen to you, maybe some random stranger downloads your stuff on the internet, but it never occurred to us that we would be popular.
Mm-mm, that was not the purpose,
you know. And slowly and slowly it just kept building up to the point where it's kind of unavoidable, like, oh, we are some level of popular. I wouldn't call us famous.
Mm-mm.
But we are some level of popular, you know, and it keeps growing, and you know, to the point where you know, we're at a pretty good spot of like, if somebody spots us or we go somewhere and meet somebody, we can still do little stuff like that. We can still, we haven't ran into any psycho fans or anything.
Mm-mm.
So we're still in a pretty good spot. But yeah, I think that was what made us want to jump out there. And Karen didn't really want to do it, which is why it's named The Black Guy Who Tips and not like The Black Couple That Does Something, or Black, I don't know, whatever I would have called it, the Rod and Karen show or something. It's not called that because Karen was like, if I quit or you want a different partner because I suck, you can just switch it out at any point.
That's why it's a nice surprise. They, you know, because a lot of people read the title and they be like, who is this black guy that tips? Wait a minute, it's a woman on the show.
Yeah, and what's funny is I would have never named it that if not for Karen. And then two, I never was gonna replace Karen. If she would have somehow quit, then it just would have not been a podcast.
Yeah.
So it's funny that, like, but it was the only way to really get her to feel comfortable like doing it. And you know, to me it felt like people liked it pretty much right away, you know, but it didn't, we didn't have a lot of listeners, so it just kind of grew and from there. Now let me go to the next session because we're gonna get cut off. But yeah, that's what made us jump out there.
I didn't even realize that I'm the star of the show about a black guy.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, because like I said, I do all this prep and all this stuff, and you know, you just show up and be yourself, and you know, your personality, and make the jokes and stuff, and that's what a lot of people come for, you know. Let me add you back to the screen, sorry.
Okay.
But yeah, anyway, I just feel like that if you're talking about the live show, what made us jump out there, that's also for me is incremental. Like, we did a panel at AwesomeCon maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and people came to see us, and us specifically, which I was not necessarily expecting. I thought it was gonna be a collective, like,
because it was a collection of people.
Yeah, like, oh, some of my favorite black podcasts are here.
Mm-hmm.
But then afterwards we were taking pictures with people and meeting people, shaking hands.
I know, people were saying our names and people were cheering. I was like, that's who they cheering for,
right? And
oh, look at that, right? Like, what is wrong,
right? And it was kind of a realization at that point, like, oh, people really like us, not just in our spare bedroom,
right? Because we back to the foundation of what we do, we just two niggas with a microphone,
right? And so it's like, these people exist, they're real, they're rooting for us, they like us. And so then the next year we did NegroCon.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Us, Where's My 40 Acres, and Movie Trailer Reviews Network, and we all like did a live show, and that was like, okay. And then we did a couple, oh wait, I'm sorry, before that I think we went to RevoltCon, which is Puff Daddy's Revolt TV flew us out to Miami to this hip-hop conference, and mm-hmm. we were on like the podcasting panel mm-hmm. with Combat Jack and rest in peace Tax Stone
mm-hmm.
DJ FN mm-hmm. Nori.
Yes.
Like that was a cool experience. And then in then we did NegroCon in DC, and then we went to PodCon in Seattle.
Yes.
They flew us out there. I mean, these are all been signs that, at least for me, confirmation that, oh, people listen, people like us, people want to hear from us. And we had fans in Seattle. That's something I did not anticipate, you know?
Mm-mm, and they showed out. They yeah. showed up and showed out.
And we got all of that stuff to say, the live show thing was just more about like, okay, now it's time. Maybe we can do this. So, you know, we took a chance on ourselves, and we'll see how it turns out on the 20th as far as, the final numbers, but it's already a success. And
as far as I'm concerned, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking about like some emotional shit. I mean, mm-hmm. numbers wise, it's already going to make money.
Correct.
That is important, because business is not, and what we do is a business. It's not just about feeling good, which a lot of people get caught up in, and then you know you end up with some serious debt, or you end up I don't know, fucked up in the game somehow, you know, like you spend all this money to make people feel good or make yourself feel good, but you ain't make no money, you know. I don't want to fan con people and shit, so mm-hmm. It's good to know that we invest in ourselves and it keeps reaping benefits as long as everything goes well. So that was, you know, it was a calculated risk to do a live show, and doing it here makes me feel more comfortable than doing it somewhere else, traveling and all this shit. But you know, eventually we probably end up traveling with these. So, anyway, I hope that answered your question. Emails. Let's get to them. Is it obtainable by Cameron, who says, good day, Rod and the lovely Karen. I'm a colored, with a U in it, male, ages 30, from South Africa. I've been following the podcast for a while, and I really enjoy it and love Karen's accent.
Thank you, baby.
I'm going to launch my podcast the end of September. My podcast is going to be social commentary, and I'm also planning on launching another podcast next year in January, and it's going to be on football, and not y'all football, but the real football, Smiley Face.
Yeah, that's soccer.
Football. I want to know, is getting ad money of $3,000 a month an obtainable and realistic goal? I'm planning on retiring in the Philippines in 3 years time, because the cost of living is cheap out there, and the country is beautiful, and so are the people. So I'll be doing my 2 podcasts and shooting vlogs around Southeast Asia. I know a guy who's been doing vlogs in Thailand for the last 7 months. According to him, that's what he's living off of, the money YouTube pays him. Not to diss my dude, but his vlogs are trash. Ooh, Jesus. And I know I can do a better
Shots
job
fired.
Right? I know I can do a better job than him. Still, shout outs to him. He's still my dude. So all I need is $3,000 a month to $2,000 a month to live off of, and $1,000 to send back home to my mother. Can it be done? Can I make $3,000 a month and add money by the next 3 years? Love y'all. Thanks y'all for the great podcast, and continue doing what y'all doing. Love y'all.
That's a very hard question to answer, just for the fact that we don't know how the structure is there. Like, cause you know, we're in the United States, completely different. And with any sponsorships and ads, it takes a while to build up sponsorships and ads. That's not something that happens overnight, particularly if you're not already famous and you're building something from the ground up. And it takes a lot of hard work and dedication before anybody will even consider sponsoring you, because they got to know you're going to be around. Because I'm not paying you for advanced shows, and you might decide to, in the middle, just to quit.
Yeah, some real shit. I don't know. That's the best answer I could give you.
Do not know.
Advertising and podcasting is based off a listener base. So the best thing you have to do, you be able to do, is build up a listener base. And then maybe pursue some advertisers, or get on some networks that have like those automatic ads.
Mm-hmm.
But without a very large listener base, I don't know that you make what you would pull in. Also, advertisers vary, like for at least for us anyway, as independent contractors, you gotta remember, we gotta invoice these people. You gotta hope they're on the up and up, send your money on time. They're constantly, you know, if you have like a percentage that you get off of something, you're kind of at their mercy for the numbers if you can't always track those sales. If you have like a deal with someone where they have to pay you a certain amount every month, a big business might not pay you, but you know, they might be slow and you need your rent every week, you know what I mean, every month.
Come on.
So advertising is kind of a risky business. If you can kind of subsidize some of that with like premium content or Patreon subscribers or something, that's a little more consistent, and that's where we get a lot of our freedom to have and run ads or choose which ads we run and stuff, and bill different people different amounts based on, you know, what we feel we should bill them. We have only been able to do that because we have all these people that are premium subscribers, and they're pretty consistent. I mean, people jump on, jump off, people, you know, fall on hard times, or they just cancel it, you know, for whatever reasons, which is totally fine. You know, so it still kind of fluctuates, but it's more consistent than an advertiser where like Bevel might, you know, advertise with us for a year and then just one day go, no more Bevel ads. Now, you know, that money's gone. So you don't want to depend on advertising as some just like nebulous concept, because that's not really how it works. You know, you got to pursue each one differently and all that stuff.
And sponsors come, sponsors go, sponsors come back, sponsors restructure deals. You know, it's all types of things when it comes to sponsorship.
Michael writes in, I was listening to the feedback show. You advised about equipment. I went to your site and looked at the equipment. Valuable info, by the way. My question is, what are some key CPU specs so I don't buy the wrong laptop? Thanks in advance. Man, I'm gonna be honest, I don't know that.
Mm-mm.
What I do is I go up in Best Buy and I look at the like more expensive PCs or laptops and try to get the one that I can, like, the most I can afford.
Right.
Like, you know, I would say at least in my estimation, when we have gotten like Dell Inspiron or whatever, like, or HP or something, like, you know, whatever you get, like, it's been in the range of like 800 to like a little over $1,000. Now obviously it's an investment, and you know, we try to dedicate those only to the podcast.
Correct.
So there's no wear and tear, extra,
right? You don't have shit. Yeah, you run down the background, just slowing it down, dragging it.
But computers age in white people years. Like,
come on, they find it, and 6 months later they're like, you know what,
right, you just looking up like, what the fuck happened? Okay. So yeah, I would say yeah, that's all I got. I don't got any real.
And it varies because we don't know nothing about Apples, because we never had any Apple computers.
Right. You are appreciated. This is from Jasmine. Says, hey, Rod and Karen, I just wanted to start off by saying that I'm a new listener. I love the show and I genuinely look forward to the new episodes every week. I hate that I can't make the live show, but my due date is September 30th. So that clearly interferes with my ability to do a lot of things, let alone travel. Congratulations, by the way.
Yes.
Good luck with everything on the due date. And keeping with my news, that I'm a mom to be, I just would like to thank you all for gathering individuals like myself all the way up and for inspiring me not to make these same mistakes twice. For background, I'm currently 25 years old and I reside in Maryland. Back during 2014 midterm elections, I was a young person who did not care to make myself knowledgeable about politics and the impact it had on my everyday life. Looking back on it, it's a bit shameful considering I graduated from an HBCU in 2016 and was constantly taught otherwise. Having a history of political ignorance, I can admit that I bought into the dangerous rhetoric about both Clinton and Trump when it came time for the 2016 election. For the past 2 years, I've seen the consequences of that, and it truly does disgust me. And listening to the blackout tips and reflecting on what kind of mom I hope to be and the type of values I hope to pass on, I vowed not to make the same mistake. When it's time for the primary elections in Maryland, I made sure to waddle myself down to the polls to cast my vote. Come November, if need be, I will make sure that I wrap my body around me, my baby around me, as I stand in line to vote again.
Come on.
Come on. I know that at this point the wrong of Trump cannot be undone, but the show has helped inspire me to make sure that I do not idly stand by as the threat of foolishness like him again. Come on. I thank y'all for constantly staying up on what is currently going on in the world and having real honest discussions about the impacts on marginalized and often overlooked communities. I'm expecting the son, and there are so many lessons that I knew I wanted to teach him, ranging from blackness to toxic masculinity, that I now know I will be able to better articulate and implement since listening to you all. Oh man,
thank you
again. Thank you for all that you for the show, and I just know that you have a listener in Maryland with swollen feet whose life you have changed for the better. Sincerely, Nugget's mom. P.S. Nugget is my nickname for my son. He kicks me like crazy when the Do You Want a Funk theme comes on. Come on. Oh man, that's beautiful. That's mm-hmm. beautiful. Sincerely, that really does make it worth it, man.
Right.
Like, it really does, because I think the hardest thing now, man, for people is to admit, like, they can improve or they wrong. Like, people like to say shit like platitudes, like, well, I'm not, no one's perfect, I including me. But then the second you're like, well, what about this thing, it's like, fuck, I know you ain't saying,
I know it's a skit record,
right? And so, you know, I feel regretful of 2016 in a certain way, because as much as I knew it was not a game, and as much as I tried to impress upon people like the seriousness of it, there was times where I was trying to like hear folks out and be like, okay, but ultimately what is your plan with this? But I have to respect what you're going to do with your vote, because everyone has a right to their vote. But I thought about it afterwards and I'm like, I was lying, because I don't really respect what you do with your vote.
Mm-mm.
And I don't have to. Nope. The same way that if somebody votes Republican, I don't have to respect that, and nobody can make me. And I, the same, you know, if you vote for Jill Stein, I don't have to respect that. You know, you can have your political views and shit, it's not like I can change it, you know, but I have this platform that we built by being honest, by being forthright, and by being unflinching about our beliefs. And when those beliefs change, we talk about that too, you know. But yeah, like, this is a home that I would love for everybody to come into. As far as our podcast, it is still our home, and we built it our way. And if people really think that their values and their views merit some level of audience, they should build their audience that way, because we build it our way, and we talk about the things, and we are two black southern democrat progressive type people, but we might not, but we don't fit in lock and step with anybody, just like no one mm-hmm. person does. But some of the stuff that was just said is it was just so foul in 2016. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Russians, Republicans, racists, and bigots all wanted us to vote the same way. And then when I see a black person say essentially those Republicans, racists, bigots, and Russians are right, I'm like, nah, that doesn't make sense to me. You don't make sense to me, you know? So, like I said, it doesn't mean I have to hate anybody. I don't want to spend all day berating people. But when I get on this mic, I'm going to tell how I feel about shit. And how I feel is, a lot of people, you know, kind of play themselves or got played. And I don't want to get stuck on that, other than to say, if we can recognize it, then we can change it.
Right.
This is not to harp on it on some like, 20 years from now, I'm gonna be like, you motherfuckers. No, what I hope happens is 2018, we see a change in the midterms, and that lasts, and in 2020, we see a change in the main offices. I hope we can do that. I don't have a lot of faith in people, but you writing in gives me a little bit of hope, because that's the shit we don't see anymore. We just, right. You just don't see it. All the people who were advocating that way either went quiet, or they don't talk about it anymore, or they double down. And a lot of them just act like they didn't do it. But right. I remember how people talked. I remember it. you know, people can't hold their heads up high no more, because it's like, this is the shitty part of what you advocated for
and what you asked for.
Yeah, so it's like, what you gonna change? And it's dope to see somebody be like, yeah man, fuck that shit, I'm gonna change, I don't want to be that kind of person. And the thing is, a lot of us have been there before. Most of us, especially when you're young,
right? Same.
Seem like a lot of work to learn on shit,
right?
You know, it's easier just to like justify myself staying home by saying, it's all the same, it's not gonna change anything. But the sad part is, it takes getting older to see the impact it has on people before you can go, oh, this is very fucking serious, and it does change things, and there is no it'll be okay. Maybe if you live in one of these sanctuary cities, one of these progressive cities that's already gonna take care of folks even despite the government, then sure, you get to be as radical as you want and just fucking tell us all we ain't shit. But many of us don't live in these cities.
Mm-mm.
Many of us live in jurisdictions where it's literally life or death, and we don't got time to play with folks. You know, we're not in California, you know, we don't have time to do this. So anyway, No Lauren Hate Shall Prosper is from Memphis, who writes in, well, you spoke about the outrage towards Lauryn Hill not fitting the crime. It made me think about Whitney Houston and the way that she was mocked and discarded in those years when she retreated before her attempts at comeback and then to her untimely death. I wonder if they love that, if the love that everyone shows now stems from guilt. Come on. That guilt that they didn't protect her enough to honor her enough while she was still here. So now we must overcompensate because we feel a little responsible. Why do we feel like we possess ownership of these women's talents? And if they aren't used how we see fit, we discard them. Black Lives Matter though, right? I also wonder if Lauren were to die today, how quickly the vitriol would become love.
Right.
Yeah, that Whitney Houston thing is a great fucking example, Memphis. That's a perfect example. You know, D'Angelo's a great example too. D'Angelo's a dude that was not comfortable with the spotlight, disappeared, had all the same like inconsistent shenanigans and shit. We don't hate him though.
Mm-mm.
Nigga came back with an album, can't nobody say to understand the words to, and it was okay. You know, it's like we're just gentler with certain folks than others. But that's a great point, that Whitney Houston one, because I remember when the joke was she's a crackhead. She had a whole ass reality show about it. They used to play clips on Talk Soup. People used to share those clips and go viral. And when she died and people went, well, she's just a crackhead, then everybody started feeling bad and was like, you can't say that about her. I'm like, well, y'all said it when she was alive. You know, y'all definitely didn't give a fuck then. It wasn't no don't talk about Whitney. You know, I don't know. Death changes people, I guess. I don't know. Huge shout out, love and respect from Arizona. This is from Jay, who says, hey Rod and Karen, I'm supposed to be working, but I had to stop to shout you both out. Found your podcast about 6 months ago. Almost passed it up but something told me to listen to the show for 5 minutes. Karen, I stand for you.
Oh, thank you, baby.
Please don't change anything you do. I live when you scream out yes at the all the time, and your joke, cheap kitty but funny as hell. Rod, your sound effects amazing. Love fucking with black people, all of it. Just want to send you out positive vibes, so I can your way. Thank you for what you do for the culture, and also thank you for recognizing LGBTQ. Hashtag Black Star Power. Hashtag thank you again. The 10th letter. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you.
We appreciate you, and that was very nice of you to write that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you enjoyed the show. Marissa writes in. Dear Rod and Karen, let me just say congrats on the live show. Wish I could be in Charlotte, but my spidey senses tell me y'all moving on up like the Jeffersons.
Yeah.
And we'll have many a future show. Now on the topic at hand, Karen, go to hell off, sis. This bullshit with Serena and the cat suit by the French Open officials is racist, sexist, trash. How is it a sister is fully clothed, but they deemed her not classy? Please. That cat suit is not even the most lit cat suit she wore, right?
Mm-mm.
That U.S. Open cat suit was the one that put her shape on the Mount Rushmore of booty. This recent cat suit was more about Serena's health and the life-threatening blood clots that she has dealt with for years, and most recent during childbirth. Hell, even if it wasn't about her health and she just wanted to stunt in the suit, so what? Tennis? the last 40 years been nothing but short dresses, booty shorts, and skirts.
Right.
Tank tops that tend to show some cleavage, and the French Open had no issues then. Just like those damn drug tests they do on Serena, more than even men, and known drug cheats like Maria Sharapova. Mm-hmm. It's steeped in racism and sexism. As I type this, the U.S. Open just had a situation blow up in their faces where a French player, Alizé Cornet, was penalized for changing her shirt on the court. Apparently, when she changed it during the changeover in the locker room, the shirt was put on wrong, and it was uncomfortable for her to play in, so she quickly switched the shirt while wearing the symbols of the bra while wearing a sports bra on the court. As given some bogus warning, meanwhile, the men players stripped their shirts off all the time, leaving the court, sitting in their chairs, and shit, and it's all good.
Right.
I and a lot of women are tired of these ridiculous double standards heaped on women, especially black women. The sport finna be crying like Keith Sweat when Serena and Venus is gone. Mm-hmm. By the way.
Cause them ratings gonna go down. Don't care what you say, them ratings gonna tank.
By the way, the John McCain Republican revisionist history is just par for the course, because when Ted Kennedy passed away in 1969, the incident known as Chappaquiddick was right there, a part of the narrative in every newscast, and rightfully so. McCain was a standard bearer Republican. He voted a lot of fuck ass policies, but his POW war hero status brought him legacy protection others won't get. You will see that when it's Bill Clinton time to depart the earth. Anyways, love the show as always. Enjoy your live show. Love y'all. Marissa from the Bronx.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marissa. And yeah, there's nothing but facts and heat throughout this entire email.
Come on.
Jeff writes in, hello, love y'all. Thoughts on this week. Black guy who tips. Ryder Carroll, what is good? Your live show coming up, and I'm so psyched for you guys. 1744, you guys broke it down on John McCain, a sign of how soon we forget and brainwashing. Although I have respected his military service, the man went on record saying that he would always hate those gooks for his treatment as a POW, and I think that says it all about how he feels about people of color, whether he even was conscious of it or not. I think he knew damn well. Yeah, I think also he was a dude that made a song out of bombing Iran, which I don't know how that, even if you want to bomb Iran because you feel like it has serious international, like, you have reasons to do it. Let's say you believe we need to bomb Iran. Why are you making a trivial song about it? Bomb, 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 bomb Iran. That's not okay, dude. It's not a joke. This isn't a Chappelle skit. You're talking about killing people. I understand that the officers of the United States means you're probably going to end up in some sort of military conflict at times. You can't be cavalier about it. You have to have some level of certainty and seriousness about what you're undertaking. It's ridiculous. He actively fought against anything that could benefit black and brown people. He repped Arizona folks. Nuff said, don't sleep. 1745, Lauren and Serena. Frankly, hearing Glasper sound off on Lauren was embarrassing. As a musician and a freelancer myself, I can dig his sentiments. Cancellations and lateness is inexcusable, though. Her ex-father-in-law, the mighty Bob Marley, played a gig after having a stroke from cancer. But it makes me want to say to Glasper, you took the money, so what you look like throwing shade? I think he lost some fans on that. I, for one, won't listen to too much of him now. As her reply makes clear, Lauryn Hill is a fierce intellectual, and she naturally intimidates men. And like Beyonce, a worldwide name, and like I felt with Beyonce, that should not have had, she should not have had to explain it so much personal detail. We all know if it were a white man or white woman even. Serena's story covering, fucking with black people section perfectly. To hell with these stuck up races and their exclusive sporting events. They make themselves look like the insecure losers they are. As Karen said, the TV ratings are thanks to Serena, Venus, and Tiger, though he doesn't really like us at all. LOL.
It don't matter. We're going to love him forever. No matter what people say, niggas is secretly fucking with Tiger. And studies and them numbers show Tiger playing, niggas is coming. Tiger ain't playing, niggas ain't watching. Period. Regardless of Cablin Asian, whatever the fuck he call himself.
You know what? That's the realest shit you ever said right there. Keep taking their money, sisters. With each episode, you guys have been even more beautifully vocal about your feelings on racial social justice, and you are on point as always. Please keep this lifeline going for us. It is so appreciated. All love and respect, Jeff in Osaka, Japan. Shout out to you, man.
Thank
Japan.
You. Wow. I know, right?
That's what's up. Last one, Miss Martikin says, hi Rod and Karen. I'm a Robert Glasper fan and have been for years, so when I watched that interview, I was cringing the whole time, like, no. The first person I thought of was James Brown, then Prince, because if either one of them would have pulled what Miss Hill was merely accused of, people would have said, genius! He knows what he wants, he's tough, but it's his name up there.
All right, they both have fired people and all kinds of shit, come on.
People were sharing a video of Michael Jackson on Facebook where he fired a dude, and he fired him like on beat. Like, he's like, David, when you gonna get a job? Like, he was singing and everything. And because he didn't stop the song on time.
Ah.
And so Michael Jackson made, you know, like, he just kept singing like he was singing song lyrics, but he was actually saying this nigga was fired.
Oh.
And people were sharing it, and I'm like, do y'all have no sense of irony? Y'all literally just got, y'all said Lauryn Hill doesn't treat bands fairly for firing them, which she said, actually, I don't fire people, but for firing them, according to y'all, she be stunting on them too hard, and I guarantee she's never done that shit. And yet, somehow, it's okay for one person to do it, not the next. I'm like, if it's bad behavior, wouldn't it be bad for all the time? I don't
right,
get it.
That double standard.
Like, what's the main difference here, you know?
A woman. That's the main difference.
What I can't stand is how people who don't perform always come out on solo artists when they don't do everything themselves. No one does. As Alicia, Steal Your Man, then Take You to the Beach Keys saying, no one. But but since it is their name, it is often their vision of how they want to be perceived and their reputation on the line. So they have final say. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill is a masterpiece and a group effort. No doubt boundaries should have been set, and very likely credit should have been given and checks cut. She was young. It's resolved now. Why bring it up? Oh, to shit on a black woman. That's why, in your direct threat to Beyonce, I was like, get out of my head, Rod. That's why she is the way she is. Some people have mastered social media in different ways, like Miss Badu, because you have to control your narrative. And I had someone say they like Solange more because Beyonce is run by the machine. What? Listen, when are we going to give her credit for her image? Not to mention, like, they from the fucking same place. If Beyonce's image is the manicured image of the machine, then so is fucking Solange's. Maybe this is just who she is, dog. You know, like, maybe if it's manicured and whatever, she manicured the shit. So still give her props.
And white people do it all the time.
Ain't nobody telling her what to do. She is 36 with a husband and 3 kids, and Miss Tina as her mama and Solange as her sister. Why can't she be black and proud? Right. It's like she has to be the coon and the other two women are black. Like, what does that mean? It's the same family. Why can't she be credited for the vision and final decisions made in her image and her production? And I like Solange too, no doubt, but Beyonce is a better performer. Solange may be a better songwriter, but Beyonce works hard and is a performance perfectionist, much like MJ. He too got his start with a father in control, but it was his work, talent, and artistry that turned him into the legend. He was much like Beyonce. Why people want to give her credit to her team and other people when it is her and her name and her reputation on the line, and they think she just shows up? None of the greats have just showed up for that long. How many album tours, records, performances she got to do to get credit for her craft? I'm sorry this is long, but y'all had me fired up. See y'all in a few weeks at the Tips Conference. Ha! Tips Conference. Tips Con. Thank you for writing in,
mm-hmm.
though. And that's everybody. Woo! This was also a kind of a long show.
Yeah, I had a lot to say.
Yeah, I did a lot of reading. Karen's over there chilling.
That's what I do. You know I'm the real talent. I'm the MVP.
Tomorrow, actually, we will be starting at 10 a.m. And we actually have a guest. It's gonna be Mike and Elizabeth from We Just Saw a Movie.
Yay! That's gonna be fun. They are the best.
Right. We don't normally have white people on this show, but we're gonna have two tomorrow, and we love them.
Oh, they have so much fun, y'all.
Like, I love their podcast. I don't know if y'all have listened to it, but go check it out. They're normally very short and reviews.
They are fucking hilarious.
Yeah, they crack me up. I suggest the Mile 22 review. I know most of y'all haven't seen the movie, that's fine. But Mike has a really great impression of Mark Wahlberg in that joint, and it was amazing.
Yes.
It had us cracking up in the car. And like, they're both amazing. They're both very funny and stuff. So as a couple that don't have kids and go to the movie a lot, I feel like we will get along.
Yes.
All right, until tomorrow, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.